Hey, everybody, it's Sunny. I just wanted to let you know that we didn't do a bonus episode for Oppenheimer. We didn't do Christopher Nolan draft or something like that because we ran out of time because we went so long on this episode, which means I had to trim something from this free episode that you're getting on the free feed of the Subbeacon. And I cut the Oppenheimer review. So if you want to hear us talk about the movie Oppenheimer, you got to go sign up at the Patreon. It's just as little as a dollar. Just go to subbeacon.com. You'll easily find it. And sign up there. Listen, we're talking about the Arnold Schwarzenegger documentary, Arnold, great hagiography for one of our great living Americans. You go check that out. It's gonna be great. And we will see you over there.
We have a 12-month head start.
18.
How could you possibly know that?
We've got one hope. All America's industrial might and scientific innovation connected here. Secret laboratory. Keep everyone there until it's done.
Let's go recruit some scientists.
Welcome to the Subbeacon Podcast. I am your co-host, Mike Warren. I'm joined, as always, by my two co-hosts, Jonathan V. Last, who was not a card-carrying member of the Communist Party, and Sonny Bunch, who, despite his best efforts, did not become Death Destroyer of Worlds. We'll be talking a little bit later about Oppenheimer, but first, go to subbeacon.com, become a patron, join the community. You can get episodes when they come out first. If you're a patron at subbeacon.com, you'll get exclusive access, to our bonus episodes. When we do those drafts, you get to vote and have your opinions, sometimes wrong opinions, about who wins those fun drafts we do for the bonus episodes. So join us at subbeacon.com. Like I said, we're going to be talking about Oppenheimer, but first we got to figure out what's going on with everybody. Sonny, why don't we start with you? What is going on in your life right now, Sonny Bunch?
Bad things. Bad things are happening.
Oh, man. Bad things. Oh, man.
Can you,
as the image for this show on the website, Sonny, make it that picture you sent us of your utility space?
Yeah, I'll include that, sure. No, it's bad. I have had kind of an ongoing struggle with my air conditioning system over the last, almost 4 years since I've been, 3.5 years now, I've lived in Texas. At first there was an issue that it was tripping the circuit breaker out in the backyard, right? So the separate circuit breaker just for the air conditioner was being tripped, and a guy came out. This is the first year we lived here. A guy came out and was like, "Yeah, you need a new fan. We'll put in a new fan, little motor. It's covered by your warranty. That's all fine." So that was fine. That was a day or we had a day or two in the middle of like 100 degree weather with no air conditioning. But that, whatever. It happens. New house stuff. So then earlier this summer, that happened again. Guy came out and was like, "Oh, yeah, your circuit board's all loose in here." So he put the circuit board back in. Everything worked fine again. It was like no more issues. And then this Sunday evening, or either late Sunday evening or early Monday morning, at some point, the HVAC system inside the house, which, again, these were outside problems. These were the condenser outside, right? The big thing in the outside. The HVAC system inside the house, it runs the heat and the cooling, starts making this terrible, the fan inside it starts making this terrible noise. I mean, like, off, like that sort of noise, right? Not what you like to hear.
Not ideal.
So we turn it off. We turn the system off. I turned it back on in the morning, and it was still making that noise. And I was like, "All right, well, we gotta get somebody out here." So we get somebody out.
You know what the sound was? That was the sound of money burning.
Basically, more or less. So we get a guy to come out. The home warranty company, which I foolishly continued paying, like $400 a year or whatever. In fees and premiums, but like it's gonna pay off because this is gonna be like a $1,200 repair. So the guy comes out and he's like, "Yeah, that sounds like your motor's bad. Let's take a look at it." So he goes to the closet where the It's basically off of my bedroom. It's not in my bedroom. It's like off of my bedroom, in a walk-in closet, like off of the walk-in closet. Anyway,
sure.
He looks at it and just like his shoulders slump, and I'm like, oh no, that's not a good. You never like to see that from your repair guy. So he's just looking at it, and he's like, okay, let me see if I can get the litter. Because what has happened, and I kind of understood this because I've been in there and I've seen what's going on in that room, but I hadn't quite understand the severity of the issue. I don't know how to describe this. You'll see it in the picture, I guess, if I put that up. But the water heater is literally like 12 inches from the front of the HVAC system, where, you know, you take the panel
off. You guys have to see the picture of this.
The access.
You have to. Sonny is not making, not even, exaggerating it. I think Sonny is underplaying.
Like, it's literally, I mean, it may not even be 12 inches. I mean, it may be less than that. But like, if you take the panel off to get into where the motor is, you could not get the motor one third of the way out without, it just simply wouldn't. I frankly don't know how they got the hot water heater in there.
They got it in there second.
Because, well, they did. No, yes. They did, but I don't know how, honestly. It's like almost too, I don't think there's enough space in there to put it. So anyway, the guy's like, yeah. Well, he like tests the motor. He's like, yeah, it looks like this needs to be replaced, but like, I can't do it, man. I literally physically cannot do it. So I was like, okay. He's like, yeah, you got to move this water heater. I mean, we can't do this. We're not set up to do this, but you can have somebody come out. We'll move the water heater. We'll replace the fan and you can put the water heater back.
Put the water heater back in. Yeah, and I was like, just like musical chairs.
I was like,
just
well, that,
musical chairs.
I was like, that's a dumb idea. And he was like, yeah, no, that is a dumb idea. I wouldn't recommend doing that. You could do that, but I wouldn't recommend doing it. So I was like, all right, well, let me get a plumber out here. So later that day, actually, this is all still on Monday. Later that day, we get a plumber out and he's like, yeah, there are a couple things we could do. We could move this existing water heater into another closet that's kind of off the hallway. That'll take, you know, you'll have to pipe.
Tankless water heaters.
You'll have to pay, or you can put in a tankless water heater and do that that way. You know, those are higher maintenance. We don't love them necessarily. They're more expensive, but like they're smaller. That's Monday again. But he was like, you could also put an electric water heater in here, in this new closet, and we'll have to run a little bit of extra. We'll have to get an electrician out here to run a new line. Anyway, long story short, it's now Thursday midday, and I have just finally managed to schedule getting a plumber out to come on Friday, to remove the water heater and put it in this other closet. Also on Friday, hopefully between the hours of 1 and 3 p.m., the air conditioner guy is going to come back and see if he can either repair or replace that fan motor, right? So I've now created this situation that is incredibly dicey, because not only do the plumbers have to show up on time and remove the water heater before like 1, the air conditioner guy has to show up between 1 and 3 and replace it. Hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll have air conditioning again Friday night. I'm not getting my hopes up because this is all none of
sequencing.
This is a sequence of events that almost certainly will take. As I said, if you see the picture, you look at the picture, you'll see what I'm talking about. I'm not entirely convinced they're going to be able to get that water heater out.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen.
I have a couple questions here.
Sure.
And I'm sure, Michael,
I do too,
that you also have questions.
I have many questions.
Yep.
My first question is, did you do a home inspection
when
you bought the
house? We did a home inspection.
And when you saw that
I was not there for the home inspection, so it was remote.
Did the home inspector not look at that and say...
I'd have to go back and look at the report. It's the sort of thing that would not have stopped us from getting the house anyway, because we had submitted a bid that was like, we're taking the house, you know.
Fair.
We're either taking the house or we're not taking the house, but we're not going to do any repair.
I understand the Texas state motto is live free or die or something like that.
Mm.
No?
Molon Lake.
Remember the Alamo. No, it's something about, they love their freedom in Texas.
Yeah.
Do they not have building codes? Because I cannot imagine how this is to code.
0% chance this is up to code. There are building codes. We had inspectors come out when we remodeled our bathroom.
Your house is not 100 years old, right? It couldn't have been grandfathered in. Like,
That water heater is a 2017 model. So that was put in three years before we moved there.
Yeah, let's just keep rolling with this.
Yes.
Michael, were you as... Like, you're just quiet over there. I expected you, as a man who understands plumbing and all these things much better than Sonny and I do, to be outraged that somebody would have done this to Santino.
You act like I'm Bob Vila. I'm not Bob Vila. But I can actually see how this happened, which is just a homeowner who didn't know any better got a contractor who didn't have any scruples to like put all this where it is, like cutting corners, like obvious, like that is what people do in this world. Like you do have to pay a little bit, right, to get somebody who actually like does the right thing. You have to know a little bit, I guess, but like, this is insane. Like, I can't imagine like somebody looking, a homeowner looking at that and being like, I'm pleased now. Thank you. Good job. Here's your check. So the other option I thought of is, well, look, I don't know. I mean, I don't have a full orientation of where it is in the house. So it's upstairs.
No, one story house.
You have a ranch house.
It's okay, a ranch,
like
ranch
mine,
style.
Like mine. Okay. And so, but this is not, it doesn't have a basement either.
No basement.
So your HVAC is, so is there any other utility stuff in the house?
No, I don't think so. I don't know what you mean. I like the power panel is in the garage.
Yeah, the power panel's in the garage. Okay.
The electricity panel's in the garage.
There's no furnace.
There's no furnace. There's
sump pump because you don't have a basement. Yeah, all that stuff. I mean, I just this looks to me like a classic case of corner cutting by somebody.
But I don't even understand why you would cut that corner. Like, it couldn't have possibly have been easier to put it there than somewhere else.
What is the age of the house? When was the house built?
1960 something.
So it was built without central air.
Yes.
Almost certainly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And so they introduced central air. Do you know when this HVAC system was put in?
Well, that HVAC is dated 2013, but there must've been AC in here before 2013.
Well, right. Maybe not. Was the house renovated and like gutted and flipped in 2013? Or
I don't think so.
I wonder if that's where the water heater always was.
Right.
But then somebody decided, okay, we gotta renovate this so we can sell it into a hot market. We gotta put AC in. They put the AC there and they were gonna replace the water heater anyway, or something like that. And so just like put it in here and it'll be the next owner's problem. Right. Because 2013, you're still in the throes of the housing bubble when nobody can accept conditions, right? No buyers can impose conditions on.
Right. That makes sense to me. Are there signs that the wall has been rebuilt or newly added? Or
that's the other thing. Can you get stuff out of there without demoing that wall?
I hope so. I certainly hope so.
We'll see.
Like I said, it's very, so the guy, the plumber who was out here, Wednesday, was like, yeah, I think it looks like it's just big enough to get, like, the space is just big enough to get this out. We'll be able to get it out. But he was just looking at it and shaking his head too. So this is the second plumber we had come out. He was just looking at it and shaking his head. Like, what is the,
where's the hot water heater going?
It's going in a closet in the hall, which is probably where it should have been in the first place. So it's going to be like, we're going to have like a utility closet off the main hall, basically is where it's going to end up.
Okay.
I got to say, when you sent us that picture, I got viscerally angry.
it's insane.
Somebody had done this to you.
It's insane. I just don't understand. I don't understand how it happened. I really don't.
It's an affront to God and nature. Would you agree, Michael? That somebody would do, like, what? Who does this?
I know who does this. This is what I'm trying to tell you. People who are cheap, people who cut corners. I've run into them in the past. I've hired people who then do insane things. And you go, why would you do that? Or why would you think to start doing that?
I'd expect that from an unscrupulous contractor up in New Jersey. I would not expect that behavior in God-fearing Texas, small towns where everybody's been raised upright.
So this is both of the plumbers who came out, like, shook their heads and were like, when people do this, it gives us all a bad name because I can't understand why this would be put this way. I don't know.
By the way, I believe actually that's the opposite of what those plumbers said. Like, those plumbers need the bad plumbers to be able to say that line
and fix it.
Yeah. Because I've heard that line from contractors before. Yeah. When people cut corners like this, they give all of us a bad name. Yeah. And I go, but you're not one of those, are you? No, sir. No. You aren't.
No true Scotsman is a contractor. Right.
The other thing, the thing that's also weird about Texas, and I guess this is true, like, everywhere in Dallas, like, no houses have basements here. And it has something to do with, like, the soil is too hard. I don't know. I don't understand why not. Wouldn't you want a basement in Dallas for all the tornadoes and, that sort of thing? I don't understand why.
It's probably just land is so cheap that you build in the cheapest way possible.
It's not cheap in Dallas, though. I mean,
it was still 60 years ago, historically, though, right?
But even when they demo these houses and build new ones, they're still not putting basements in them. Apparently, it's, like, very expensive to do this. I don't understand why. Is what it comes down to.
Mm. Well, Sonny, you are strapping one on to tape this in what must be, you must be wallowing in your own sweat while you're taping it.
You
are essentially like Alec Guinness in Bridge on the River Kwai in the sweat box.
It's currently heroic. 88 degrees in the rest of the house. It's probably like 90 in this room right now. And I showed Mike before we got on the show. Last night I froze a quart sized, or whatever this is, a 30 ounce sized Gatorade bottle. I put water in it and I froze it. And I now just have it resting, it's cradled by my feet next to a fan that you might be hearing some background hum on. I'm going to try and filter that out in the episode. Hopefully folks won't have to listen to it at home. But if you hear some crinkling, some ice being chewed or drunk, shook, that's me. That's me, folks.
Where's your hand fan? You gotta sort of, like, you're out on the front porch,
I don't.
Oh, it's hot. It's hot out here again.
I don't have. It's not. This isn't New Orleans.
All right. All right, Sonny. Fantastic. JVL. What's going on with you? Cannot be anywhere as bad.
No, I have nothing. I wanted to talk to you about your injury.
My injury.
How are you doing? You're actually in a brace and everything.
It's a compression glove.
What did you do?
So this was Sunday. So we're now we're taping this on Thursday. So this is 4.5 days. So it's two games against the Swingers again. We had to face the Swingers one more time. And
by the way, one of my girls was wearing a swimsuit with a pineapple on it the other day, and now I can't. No more pineapples.
Take that off.
You ruined that for me, Michael.
Only if it's upside down. So the Swingers are, by the way, gunning for the championship again. Mm. And I believe I mentioned last week that I found out that we are essentially playing up a level from where we should be. So that was evident. We are actually winning the first game, and we blew it with, like, a time management problem. Like, basically what we needed to do was stretch out our inning at the plate for as long as possible, but we just didn't, and, like, we basically had, like, 4 minutes to go, and I think we wrapped up the inning in 3 minutes, and then we had to go play a whole other full inning, and that's when they came back and won. So they won the first game, and we're feeling pretty down because they're, like, really like firing on all cylinders. I'm back to playing catcher, and in the middle of the second game, I'm playing behind the plate, and there's a good hit into the outfield. I think a runner runs from second, and he's rounding third to come home. The ball comes back in, and I catch it. And I'm kind of standing to facing the outfield. I'm standing kind of to the right of home plate to catch the ball from the outfielder. And I can see our guy, our base runner, running toward me. And I think, oh, I got this guy. He's a big guy. Does he have 100 pounds on me? Absolutely. Does he have more than that?
And not probably dual home plates. This is a single home plate.
Yes. Yes. So this is not a league that has the fields that we play on don't have the dual home plate, which is regrettable, as you'll see.
Now you understand why they make those.
Oh, totally. So I know that I have the time. I got it in my glove. I can reach over. I'm a righty, so the glove is in the left hand, and I reach over and kind of shuffle over to the other side of home plate to try to tag him. And he's close, and he's barreling, and he's not slowing down, and he's going full speed. I will submit, and I will believe this till my dying day, that I tagged him out before he crossed home plate. He wasn't called out. My pitcher did not think I got him out. My third baseman did. So you be the judge. I am convinced that I did. And I think he knew that I tagged him out, because in the split second, right after I did it, he leans into me and knocks me on my ass with the force of, again, a 350 pounder. Like, this boy is big, and he is barreling into me. And so I'm knocked on my ass. I get up. Everyone's like, oh, and I'm like, I can't believe they didn't call him out. That's like my first thought. But
you held on to the ball, right?
The ball's in my glove. I got him. They just said that he touched the plate before. But
did you demand that they call up to New York?
No, but there was talk of that. No, but I was too shocked. It was sort of like, you know, I'm like, damn, I'm like, oh, man, that knocked the wind out of me.
Wait, I'm sorry. Can I I may have missed this as you were discussing it, but are you in front of the plate? Are you like blocking home plate, or are you kind of on the side?
I'm standing almost over home plate, but not. So I am reaching my arm out kind of across home plate from the right side as he's coming in from third. So it is not a clean, I'm standing right in front of him, okay, between him and home plate, but the ball is in my glove. The glove is over home plate, reaching over and tagging him before his foot touches home plate.
So you're not, I guess my question is, you're not doing like Pudge Rodriguez style,
No. That would have been even less advised than what I did.
Okay.
What I should have done is just stepped out of the way, pussed out, and let him score. Because as soon as I get up and I'm like, oh, okay, wait a second. And I'm like, got my glove on. I'm like, God, that really hurts. I take a few more pitches. We end the inning. Ah, this really hurts. I was like, oh, you all right? You all right? We're going into the dugout. Yeah, right. Yeah. And I start rubbing. I start looking. There is a golf ball growing on my wrist.
Ooh.
And I'm like, that's not good. And I try to pick up a bat, and I can barely hold the bat. And I'm like, that's really bad. So I tell him.
Was he apologetic for running you down and bopping? Like, what was the, give me before you. So there's the incident.
Mm-hmm.
He hits you. You don't argue the call or whatever. I know how you roll. You play the game the right way. Does this guy say, hey man, you okay? Does he check on you? And
no, not until the end of the game. As we're good gaming and going, he reaches over and gives me a hug, which I thought was nice. He said he felt bad, and I said, it's okay. So maybe he didn't, or maybe he did, and his conscience was getting to him. Lean into it. But there was really no call for him to like barrel, like knock me over. Like they were winning. They're going to win the championship. And like, it was a little much. And as I was talking to our captain, who is the one who roped me into this team in the first place, later, he was like, they were doing all kinds of stuff throughout that game that was like way more intense than it should have been, you know, just hard throws. And one guy got like nailed in the foot from a hard throw playing third. But anyway, it was like, again, we're playing up at a level of competitiveness that like nobody was really signed up for. But he felt bad. And he said, "You all right?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm fine." But meanwhile, I'm just like icing it out of the beer cooler, like just ice, one thing of ice after the other. And I told him, I said, like, I got to pull myself out. Like, I cannot play. I can't hold my glove up. I can't hold the bat. Barely hold the bat. I certainly can't swing the bat. And they're like, okay, how about this though? How about you stand at the plate and just take strikes? Because there's the likelihood you walk. But we don't have any replacement players. So you'll get an automatic out because we've already started the game under the rules of this league. So it's either an automatic out or just stand there, take the strikes.
You can't sub? This league doesn't have substitutions?
It does, but we don't have enough players to sub.
Oh, that's right, because your ringer boys are gone, right?
Ringer boys are gone. Yeah. I mean, it's a struggle just to get enough players.
Gotcha.
So I stood there. And I almost walked both times, but they struck me out. So, and after that, I got home and I was in a lot of pain. And the next day, my lovely wife went out and got me this compression glove. You guys can see my hand is...
Anything broken?
Have you gone to the doctor?
No, I haven't gone to the doctor. I don't think I need to go to the doctor.
No, why would you?
No, like I can tell.
Nah,
like
that's fine.
I would be screaming in pain. Like it wasn't screaming pain. It's bruised. It may have been sprained.
Could have a microfracture.
I could have a microfracture, but probably not.
I mean, Michael, I don't want to tell you what to do.
Sure.
You're a grown man. But you are a writer. This is the kind of injury that affects your livelihood.
Well, that's
because
why the
this
gloves
is the
here.
Kind of injury that we need to be able to type with our little fingers on the keyboard.
I know, but once I put this on, I was able to type.
Okay.
It stabilizes. It's fine. It's just my hand is like all puffy now, and I can't
just
get
cutting off circulation of the rest of your hand. It's fine.
It's fine. No, my fingers are puffy too. Like I can't get my wedding band off.
2 days from now, it's like, my fingers are black and they're starting to smell a little bit. It's fine. Fine.
But I will
you're going to wind up with a Terminator hand.
The swelling on my wrist, the golf ball has gone down. Like it started to go down the next day. So like I felt like
it'd be Buster Blue with the hook.
Sure.
Anyway, so that's my injury. It's not been great in terms of like it was really hard for 2 days to pick up a baby.
Are you done for the season finally? Is this cockamamie softball league finished? Because I have to say, as I predicted, this was a terrible experience for you, and you should never have done it.
No, I loved it, except for the end. But I did have a feeling. I had a sort of Oppenheimer-like feeling that, like visions that I was going to get injured, and that's what happened. So we have two sets of makeup games that we have to make up from rain. And what the league has done, we were just informed, is scheduled all four games for one evening. From 6 to 10.
1 hour games. Four
1 hour games. And so the consent, I'm not going because I literally can't play.
Yeah.
But the consensus is now that we will play the first two games against the winless team in the league and then forfeit the next two games against the second place team in the league.
How about you just settle this all with rock, paper, scissors?
Anyway.
All right.
Are we good? Yeah, that's good.
Man.
That's basically the end of the
podcast. You guys are having a rough week. God, it's been a rough week for the boys. All right.
All right. Well, so we should move on and talk.
JVL, anything? What's going on?
No, JVL said no. JVL said
nothing.
I don't have anything.
I don't have anything.
All right. So let's talk box office thoughts. Anything happened in the box office this week, guys? I mean, is it right? There were any movies that did well this week in the middle of the summer? Oh, yeah. Two, Barbie and Oppenheimer. $162 million for Barbie. $82 million for Oppenheimer. Both opening. There's not been a week like this, and who knows how long, like two big movies like this that aren't like franchises, aren't superheroes, have opened and opened this well. What are our box office thoughts about the Barbenheimer weekend?
It's the fourth. It was either the fourth or fifth biggest weekend in box office history. I forget which, but like enormous weekend and an unusual giant weekend, because usually those weekends are driven entirely by one big movie, right? So it's either Star Wars The Force Awakens, you know, is one of those weekends, Avengers Endgame, you know, mm-hmm. that was one of those weekends. But this is an unusual weekend in that it was two movies driving the giant box office. First time two movies have opened to more than $80 million, and indeed it's the first time two movies have opened to more than I think $50 million. So like the
what were the final numbers on them both?
So 162 and 82, I think. Was that okay? Is that what you just read?
Yeah, 162 and 82 and a half.
Yeah. So you know, they're huge, enormous numbers. They're much mm-hmm. bigger than anybody was tracking or anybody was expecting. You know, Warner Brothers put out a nonsense number that was $75 million. Everybody thought that was lowballing it. That it looked like the movie was going to make $100 or $110 million. But I'll just toot my own horn here for a second. I went to the Draft House on Thursday night. I needed to kill 30 minutes while my daughter was doing violin practice. I went to the Draft House for 30 minutes, just sat there, drank a beer. And as I was sitting there drinking the beer at the bar, I saw three different giant groups of like moms and daughters come in like Barbie gear to take pictures in front of the standees or something. And I tweeted, you can look it up. I tweeted, LOL, this movie's going to make $150 million. And it turns out I even lowballed it. I mean, it wound up doing even better than that as the weekend went along, which suggests really good word of mouth. I mean, it got an A from CinemaScore. It's playing really well. But Oppenheimer also just did huge, enormous numbers. I mean, people were thinking, you know, in the $40 million range with Oppenheimer, $40 to $50 million, which would have put it a little below Dunkirk, but in that same basic realm. And instead it did $82 million, and that was driven largely by the premium large format screens, right? So the PLF screens, your IMAXs, your Dolbys, et cetera.
Where does this rank for R-rated openings?
R-rated openings, it was just outside of the top 10. I think it was 11 or 12. But it's the second biggest opening for a biopic ever after American Sniper. It's third biggest, depending on how you want to count. Passion of the Christ technically did a little better, but I don't know if that counts as a biopic.
As a biopic,
very interesting. I don't know if that counts as a biopic. But most of the big R-rated openings are like the Deadpool movies. It and its sequels, one of the Hangovers.
But this is original, right?
This is like an original non-IP sort of thing. Again, I think the only real comparison point is American Sniper.
Does Passion of the Christ count as original non-IP?
Another great question. Well, I mean, like I feel like if
it's based on a book.
If American
based
Sniper
on a very
counts,
famous book.
If American Sniper counts, which was also based on a very successful and popular book.
Oppenheimer 2.
And Oppenheimer, which was based on, you know, anyway, I think this counts as non-IP. It's an enormous achievement. I mean, like, I'll put it this way. So year to date, the box office was running about 10% ahead of where it was last year. After this weekend, it's now running 15% ahead of where it was last year. And that number is going to get bigger because last year's stretch between August and October or November or so was just dire. There was nothing in theaters. Yeah. Like all the way through past Labor Day, there were zero movies that opened to more than $100 million. Like the Labor Day weekend, the number one movie in the country was Top Gun Maverick that got re-released into theaters.
What are our theories about what turned it around for Barbie. I mean, we talked a little bit about this, but like,
yeah, so
2 months ago, we thought this thing was going to be a bomb.
Well, so, not just us, everybody. Right.
So two months ago, it was interesting. I talked to David Heron of the Quorum at the Bulwark Goes to Hollywood about the tracking on Barbie. And he was like, you know, it's really interesting. The awareness on this movie is very high and the interest is very low, which is not great because like it's easy to create awareness. It's harder to create interest. So if you have a situation where awareness is high and interest is low, you're looking at bad times. And I don't know exactly how they turned it around, but I think it's a combination of they found the audience that they really needed to find, which was essentially 20 to 50 year old kind of irony soaked millennial Gen X women to show up for this. And they turned that audience out. It helped that the reviews were very good, right? The review, it's 90% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. So this is one of those rare movies that I think was a little more review dependent than some others. But then it got really good word of mouth. Again, it like ticked up all weekend. That first wave of women showed up, and then the rest of them they got everybody else to come. It was a
I gotta word say,
the, JBL, what do you think?
The atmosphere at my multiplex was like 100 different bachelorette parties were going on. With just groups of, I don't want to say girls, groups of young women in the 20 to 35 demo, like big groups of them slutting it up, wearing lots of pink. And I just thought, man, you could shoot The Wedding Crashers about going to a Barbie movie, right?
But I don't think you could, though, is the thing. I think it's like very much a girl power.
You just go show up to a Barbie movie and there's going to be someone there who's willing to go home with you.
I don't know. Maybe at a draft house.
Yeah, the draft house.
You get a bottle of wine into them.
Get a few of those spritzers that they were selling at the
draft house. White claws. Some white claws into them.
So, but this does sort of, I mean, I guess it's, maybe this will be studied. I don't know, in marketing classes, but the way in which it transformed, and I felt like I was watching it in real time, it transformed the movie into an event and into the sort of sense that like, that you wanted to go. It was like a party that you really wanted to go to for those irony soaked 20 to 50 year old women. Like that is, I don't know how you do that, but it was, I think, such an achievement of the Warner Brothers marketing department.
The trailers and the ads never looked good to me.
No.
Like you know, the excitement seems to be organic. Like
not just for us. Not movie, not for us.
No, I mean, that's fair enough. I've been told it's very good, and it was an all quadrant hit, right? It's John Podhoretz says it's really good. I can't wait to see it. No. I'm excited and eager to see it. Probably gonna take my mother-in-law with me. I'm super into it. You know, I feel like we've finally solved the theatrical release problem though for Hollywood, Sonny.
What's that? How?
All you have to do is just make 40 high-quality original movies a year.
You just make good movies. You just make hits.
Just make the hits, which is what Netflix did to turn everything around.
If you remember,
they were just going to start pressing the hit. They had the button for hit, and they just hadn't been pressing it.
Yeah.
So now, Hollywood will just press that button and make 40 high-quality movies a year, then everything's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Right? This is the key. You just make good original movies and the audiences will come back to the theaters.
I mean, for all the talk about Barbie's success, and it's huge and enormous, and this movie will, I think it will probably end up beating Super Mario Brothers at the box office. I think it's going to end up being the biggest movie of the year, domestically at least. I mean, I could see this movie doing anywhere between $600 and $700 million. I don't want to like say this will definitely happen, but I could see this movie having a $100 million second weekend, which almost never happens. We'll see. The success of Oppenheimer, which we'll talk about, we'll review here in a second. I swear, people, is even more impressive. Really, I mean, you have a 3 hour
the most Sonny thing
epic.
Ever.
It's a 3 hour the girl
movie,
epic.
Written and directed by the girls. About the interior lives of women is fine. But this Christopher Nolan movie is more impressive in its performance.
It's actually, I mean, it's not, but it's also not a very good movie. I mean, whatever. But the Oppenheimer is a very good movie. And it's a 3-hour historical epic, rated R, half in black and white, with no real star in the lead. Real Cillian Murphy is a known quantity, but not exactly a movie star. And that movie opened up to $80 million on essentially the strength of Christopher Nolan being like, you got to see this movie. And you got to see this movie that takes entirely place in laboratory rooms and Senate hearing rooms and offices. You got to see this in IMAX. You don't see it in IMAX. You didn't even see it.
Yep.
And it worked. People showed up. People were excited. So,
well,
good job, Christopher.
We're
all proud of you.
Not a Floppenheimer, but a Boppenheimer. Let's talk about Should I stop Oppenheimer? Let's talk. Let's talk about Oppenheimer. Okay, well, I guess that's all the time we're going to give to this episode. Remember, subbeacon.com. You can join us there. Listen, when we have bonus episodes, you can listen to those exclusively at subbeacon.com. Thanks for listening. So, I did say that this was my wife's first time at the movie theater in a long time. And we went to the Alamo and, it was lovely. It was great.
Yeah.
And the place was packed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was a Friday night, granted, but like,
yeah,
it was your old Alamo actually, JBL,
Potomac,
the one down in Woodbridge. Yeah. And we both had this conversation with each other, where it's just like, you know, it's fleeting and it won't be like this forever, but it was just so great to have, like, it felt like a good movie weekend. You know, it was like, everybody's out here at the movies. Everybody's right. Enjoying this. Isn't this wonderful?
It is wonderful. This is why we need theatrical.
Yeah. Totally. Right?
It's
totally.
The energy of the place.
And yes.
It's wonderful. Man, these shows are getting long. I have something good for outtakes, but the show's too long. So I'll just have to save it for next time.
Save it for next week?
Yeah, right. That's right.
I'm sure it's fine.